The European Patent Office podcasts bring you an insight into the technology and innovation shaping the world.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the European Patent Office, in which we'll be discussing our latest patent index for 2022. This presents the statistics for patent applications to the EPO last year, which technologies are booming or declining, which applicants are more or less active. If you like trends, rankings, league tables, and so on, there's so much to explore in our patent index. My name is Jeremy Philpott, and I work in communication at the European Patent Office. Joining me today are two experts in the diverse technologies found in the new energy landscapes. First, we're joined by the EPO's chief economist, Yann Minière. Yann's team investigate and analyze economic data in combination with patent metrics. They do this in relation to particular sectors or technologies, issuing reports on such topics as hydrogen production and use, the transition to low carbon energy, and battery technologies. He's a podcast regular, so welcome, Yann.
Hello, Jeremy. It's good to be back.
And also joining us is patent examiner Victor Wiefken. Victor has a master's and PhD in materials sciences, specializing in catalysis. He joined the EPO 24 years ago in catalysts and today is working in detergents. Keep it clean, Victor. He's been working with Yann's team, tracking data on energy technology trends, and has over a decade of experience mapping patents on climate change mitigation technologies. Welcome, Victor.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks. Hi, Yann. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you here. Okay, so new patent index is out. Overall application numbers are up. We're at about 2.5% more applications than we had in the year before. So around 193,000 applications received at the EPO last year. But there's quite some differences in the profiles of certain countries. We saw Germany getting a lot of headlines, unfortunately for the wrong reasons, because applications from Germany are down nearly 5% in 2022, whereas from China, applications are up over 15%. So different countries performing at different levels, more or less demand for European patents for them. And so I'd like to come to both of you as the experts in the trends for a lot of the clean energy technologies. What are we seeing in terms of divergences in patenting activity in that particular field across the different countries?
Well, as you said, Jamie, there is a lot to analyze and to understand in these annual trends. And you rightly mentioned that the overall trend is quite robust and positive, and that denotes continuous long-term growth of innovation as tracked by patent applications. And there are several things underlying, actually, several technology trends. A big one that has been there for years is the rise of digital technologies. This explains in particular why filings from the US, from China, or from South Korea are growing so fast. But there are other important trends, and a big one is indeed the energy transition. This is visible, for instance, when we look at the transport, traditional transport technologies, it's slightly decreasing. So typically automotive and internal combustion engines. And at the same time, we have a very significant growth in technologies related to electrification, including the electrification of cars, which are growing at a much faster rate, namely plus 18% for last year. And this is the trend that we are mostly observing in Europe. And you mentioned Germany. This is the case for Germany, for instance. We have a number of industries, starting with the automotive industries, that are transforming with this energy transition.
Yeah, indeed. I plotted the decline in a whole lot of classical mechanical technology fields against the rise of a whole lot of digital technology fields, and the decline in patenting from Germany sort of seemed to mirror the trends in the demise of classic mechanical. I'm not saying that that's the single explanation, but I think the parallels were there. Whereas the rise coming from China and Korea, for example, was almost exactly mirroring the rise in digital technologies, which tells you a lot about where their particular focus and strength is. One of the other technical fields that we monitor is so-called environmental technology, but that's a little bit misleading because some people imagine, oh, that must be where all of the green tech is. And actually, environmental technology as a technical field is where we're looking at the patents that relate to things like pollution control, air filters, dealing with smoke, firefighting, sewage treatment and so on. Although it's called environmental tech, it's those things, pollution control, it's also air conditioning. It's not necessarily green tech as we consider it. And certainly it's not where you'll find the stuff on green energies.
I think what's the field that we are mainly looking at when we speak about green energy related techs would be, you can split it in three areas. So it's the energy production, but also the use of energy. How can we actually reduce the use of energy in many different areas? And there's the area of how do we make the demand and the supply meet each other? And that's where you speak about distribution and energy storage, for example. Now, in the energy supply side, it's the classical renewable energy generation technology. So you're speaking about solar energy, both solar thermal as well as solar photovoltaic. And you have wind power, you have energy from the sea, you may have geothermal, hydro energy from lakes, etc. There's quite a lot of different technologies that actually fall under the more broad term green energy related technologies.
And this stuff is scattered all over the patent classification scheme.
Afraid so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and an interesting observation from the patent index, actually it's a trend that started a few years ago, but it's quite recent, is that we see for the first time a divergence between the energy sector in general and the fossil fuel technology. So patenting in fossil fuel technologies starting decreasing around 2018, so in the trail of the Paris Agreement. And it's the first time in, actually not in a generation, but in generations. So it's a major change, a major shift. And we see a momentum to the contrary in the patenting of green technologies generally defined. So that includes, as Victor says, clean energy production, but also importantly, technologies that are related to the exploitation and the distribution of this clean energy.
Yeah. In fact, in the patent index, we've got a special feature written by Ben Tendler that I know you both contributed to the data for it. The feature on the new energy landscapes, there's this lovely chart in it, the way he's tracking the rise in various technologies against the patenting activity for fossil fuel technologies. And it's noticeable that in the last 5 years, the trend is pointing down at last, okay? So less fossil fuel patenting is going on, whilst all of the others are going up. And the one that really stands out, of course, is batteries, because batteries has just gone whoosh. The patenting activity in batteries is really, really taking off. And that sort of, that's a nice segue into the next point I wanted to touch on. Of the top technology fields at the EPO, in the top 10, the biggest increase, year-on-year increase, that we saw in 2022 was in technical field number 4, the fourth busiest one, electrical machinery, apparatus and energy. And that was up, I think it's just over 18%. And the growth in batteries, which is part of that area, was up by even more. The growth there was up 48%. It's truly astonishing.
It's also interesting to observe that it's increasingly diverse in terms of geography. So typically, it's dominated by Japan and Korea, but we also see Europe, the US, increasingly active in that field, especially the automotive industry, and China now. So until recently, most of the patent applications at the EPO coming from China were focused on digital technologies, as we discussed. And now we start to see also applicants, major applicants, in the field of batteries. And that shows how important this technology is for the energy transition. So everybody knows that that's the way to electrify the automotive sector, but it supports electrification much more generally beyond automotive. And it's critical to balance the grid, so to make sure that the demand and supply for electricity can be equaled despite the intermittency of renewable energy production, which depends on the wind and on the sun, and so is not necessarily ready when the demand is strong. So batteries, energy storage are very important, and we can expect even more innovation to come in the future years.
Victor, is it just lithium ion technologies, or is there a new generation of battery-related technology that's in the pipeline that we're going to see hitting the market soon?
That's a really good question. I think in the past years, the batteries for electric vehicles have clearly driven the growth in the battery area. It's a huge industry, lots of developments going on, not only in, let's say, the chemistry of the battery, but also in how you make the battery packs. Any, let's say, cubic centimeter that you can win the size of your battery pack at the same energy density, the better it is, because you can put more batteries in your car, as it were. So a lot of the space and weight gains also come from how you actually construct your whole battery pack. But there are also developments in, let's say, non-lithium iron batteries. A really great example was last year in the European Inventor Award, we had a winner in non-EPO, and it was Sadoway.
Yeah.
And he had a liquid metal battery. And that is fantastic, because in a classical lithium ion battery, what you have is you have solid anodes and cathodes. And with the electrochemical processes that go on inside the battery, these degrade over time. You have the structural integrity of these anodes and cathodes get worse and worse, and thereby the potential to recharge it back to its initial capacity. What that guy invented was liquid metal. So your anodes and your cathodes are no longer solid, they're liquid, and therefore they cannot structurally degrade. So I thought it was a fantastic invention. And this type of inventions, this type of other batteries are particularly useful for large grid type of storage normally, because they're less suitable for your phone or your laptop or elsewhere, also because they may operate at higher temperatures. There's developments really in different kinds of fields in batteries. It's a super exciting field to work in, I think.
I also think it's interesting that in the Inventor Award, we've had the father of the lithium ion battery, Akira Yoshino, as a finalist 2019. And then last year we had Donald Sadoway also for completely different type of battery technology. But it also shows the recognition that the award has of the significance of battery tech per se, because of its impact in all areas of our lives. So essential. So I'd now like to come to Jan, probe a bit more about hydrogen, because you put out a study on hydrogen technologies or the patenting of them earlier this year. So where does hydrogen fit in all of this? You know, we've talked about batteries. You know, do we even need hydrogen? Or if we use hydrogen, do we need batteries?
Well, we do need both, actually, and we need them quickly. So like batteries, hydrogen are a key catalyst of the electrification of the industry, which is the way actually to get rid of fossil fuels as a source of energy. And in some sectors, so-called hard-to-abate sectors, it's not possible, it's not easy to directly use electricity or to directly use batteries, and you need to find smarter ways of avoiding fossil fuels. One example is the steel industry. So steel production is the cause of about 8% of carbon emissions overall. It's huge and it's very difficult to electrify. And a technology like hydrogen can help to do that. Is a way to get rid of coal, basically, as an input for steel production. And there are other sectors like that that are difficult to decarbonize, like long-distance transport, aviation, shipping. And there is the production of fertilizers, for instance, that are today based on the hydrogen, but hydrogen derived from gas, from fossil fuels. There is a lot to do in the world of hydrogen, and the first step is to decarbonize the production of hydrogen itself, so to stop producing hydrogen from gas and to replace that by electricity, electrolysis, and then to find ways to ship that hydrogen in sectors that are currently very difficult to transform away from fossil fuels, like the ones I cited, steel, long-distance transportation, and fertilizers. So that was the goal of this study. So as you can guess from what I described, it's difficult to track this technology. So actually, we partnered together with Victor, with an expert of the International Energy Agency. And so it's a joint study where patents have been identified in line with the policy objectives set by the IEA.
Yeah, I think the field of hydrogen is quite complicated, because on the one hand, hydrogen is already produced for a really long time, especially in the chemical industry. Some of the processes in the chemical industry are already a century old that use hydrogen. Think of the Haber-Bosch cycle, where you can make ammonia from hydrogen. There's also other reactions, like Fischer-Tropsch is another very old technology that is used to make fuels out of basically hydrogen and carbon units. And on the other hand, there are a lot of potential new uses, in particular as energy vector, or for the storage of energy. And these may also need new means of transportation and distribution again. Of course, as Jan already mentioned, there's one major drawback with the current way of making hydrogen, and that is that it's mainly produced from fossil sources and therefore emits a lot of carbon dioxide. That is what you call gray hydrogen normally. And so indeed, the holy grail sort of, and it's quite achievable, it's not really a holy grail, but it's something that you really want is to make that from renewable energy sources as green hydrogen. And currently, the best way to do that seems to be by electrolyzing water. electrolyzing water. What you do is water is H2O. H2 is hydrogen, O is oxygen. And by means of injecting electricity into it, you split it into its sort of two parts, hydrogen and oxygen. And that's super clean in principle.
And the good news is that we really see in the study a boom of innovation of patenting in electrolysis, so in the production of green hydrogen. So there are several alternative technologies that are competing. We will see that are competing for mass production, mass industrialization. So we still have to see what becomes the standard. But we see in any case that Europe is well positioned in this respect, both in terms of patenting, but also in terms of projects for manufacturing for so-called electrolyzers.
Yeah, and the EPO published a separate report just on patenting trends and electrolyzers last year. So that's separately from the patent index, just on this one particular, as it were, subfield within hydrogen tech. It shows just how important it is. Look, we've talked about areas that are booming, batteries, hydrogen. Are there any particular technology fields that you see are either declining or perhaps they've declined but they're enjoying a renaissance? Well, the one that sticks in my mind is photovoltaics. The technology trends there, like peak and trough and peak and trough, it sort of stabilizes and matures. And then suddenly there's another breakthrough. And all of a sudden, everybody's back and doing the next generation photovoltaic. And then that goes quiet. And then a decade later, there's another breakthrough. And all of a sudden, photovoltaics are really interesting again. So what have we got there? Jan?
You're right. Actually, the maturation of photovoltaics is one of the major economic news of the past 10 years. So it was still an early stage technology at the beginning of the century. It was quite expensive. And now with experience, with scale, it has become very cheap, actually cheaper than energy from fossil fuels. And it's being massively deployed. And this means that the technology is mature also. So there's still some progress. The efficiency, the cost can still be improved, but it's at the margin. So now we need to look at the next generations of solar energy. And there is innovation in that space. For instance, perovskite cells. So it's new ways, a new design concept of solar cells that dramatically increase the efficiency of the solar panel. So it's not ready yet. It's not on the market, but it may come in the next years. And we also see, for instance, innovation in so-called organic photovoltaic cells. So it's materials that are flexible. So even your clothes, for instance, could become solar cells, or it could be put on windows, for instance, or it could be a way to power very small objects. And there's also a lot of innovation going on in the combination of digital technologies with solar farms. So using artificial intelligence to orient the panels and to capture a maximum of energy from the sun. So it's a very active field, but innovation is not focused anymore on the basic technology, which is really mastered, really mature, but on the next generation of photovoltaic technologies, I would say.
I remember there was, again, another Inventor Award finalist, some entrepreneurs up in Sweden, and they had flexible photovoltaics and really, really small. There's sorts of things that ultimately you could scale down to the point where it's no more than a skin that you put on the reverse side of your smartphone. And that's going to be able to draw enough power to run the phone. So
exactly. And likewise, you can put it on your window. It's transparent and your window becomes a solar panel.
Oh, wow. So transparent foils means that your windows are also generating the power inside the room.
What I find interesting as another technical field is wind turbines. The interesting part there is that wind turbines exist. They work well. So a lot of patenting in the past has gone into how to develop wind turbines, the most efficient way, et cetera, et cetera. And what you now see, in fact, is not so much the patenting to the technique of getting even more power or energy out of your wind, or let's say the gears or gearless, things like that. But it's much more about all the technology around it. So in offshore, for example, offshore is a very harsh environment. How do you protect your wind turbines? What about ecological impact of your wind turbines? What can we do there? How to get to maintain your offshore wind turbines? So we had another European Inventor Award winner, Jan van der Tempel, who had this device to get onto wind turbines even when the sea was moving a lot.
I love that. That was massive engineering. I absolutely loved it. That was engineering on the big scale.
Yeah. It would be really nice to get on one of these things one day, get on the ship and then let yourself being walked up to the wind turbine. It would be a really nice thing to do once. But in any case, as I said, just all the technologies that now surround it yeah, there's a lot of innovation going in there, and they're really profiting from, let's say, the initial work that has been done by the pioneers of wind turbines.
The wind turbine technology per se is approaching maturity, but there's this boom area going on around it in terms of better materials, ease of maintenance, longevity, reducing environmental footprint, and so on. Look, guys, we're nearly out of time. And there was a last idea I wanted to run past you. Given what you know, you know, looking at the trends in green energy of the various different forms, where do you think we're going to get to in terms of the technologies in the next few years? Or perhaps, you know, do you want to tell me, you know, what you're hoping for, what you're waiting for?
One thing that needs to be mentioned here is that it's really a race against the clock. So according to the International Energy Agency, for instance, about half of the technologies that are needed to reach net zero by 2050 are still in the R&D or demonstration stage. So they have not reached the market yet. And we see with batteries, with solar panels, that it can take decades. So it's really a race against the clock to develop new technologies and bring them to the market on a massive scale. Definitely, there are wishes and expectations for the future. The technologies that we see being patented today need to quickly reach the market, so those that we just discussed. And there are other technologies in the pipeline where we start to see the first patents that needs likewise to further develop. And there are many of them, but to me, it would be geothermy. So we know geothermal energy already, but now there are ways of leveraging the technologies of the oil industry to drill much deeper and extract this energy on a much more massive scale. And this is not mature yet. Actually, this is being explored, tested today. And we will know in the coming few years whether it's doable. And if that happens, that can be a game changer in terms of scale, in terms of amount of energy that can be produced in a clean way. So that's one example, but there are many other technologies like that in the pipeline that we need to keep watching.
From my side, there's two things I find interesting. I'm quite interested in how to balance the demand and the supply always of energy. I think that's going to be crucial in the near future. And smart grids is what has been mentioned quite a lot for doing this. So it's more like AI type of solutions on how to make people use energy when there's a lot of it and how to not use it when there's not much of it and all balancing this all out, a pricing mechanism. So it's a lot of digital technologies involved there, but we haven't really seen it yet. So I'm kind of wondering, okay, when are we going to see this really breakthrough? Because it's going to be necessary in the end in order to balance that demand and supplies. And in the long term, I think what it may sound not so green, but I think nuclear is going to be something to watch, because for the energy mix, that may be another way to get non-fossil energy. There's quite a lot of exciting developments there. We have nuclear fusion that hopefully is around the corner now. There's been hopeful signals coming from the US there about making it. And thorium reactors for nuclear fission is super interesting. They produce a lot less waste, and maybe in the future they turn out to be a solution as well.
Nuclear fusion, yet another piece of science fiction that we've been promised for decades. But as soon as we have nuclear fusion, all our problems will be over. Hasn't happened yet. We can only hope. That's it. We're sort of out of time. But thank you so much. It's been a huge amount of fun talking to both of you. Thanks a lot for all you had to share. And thanks to all of you out there for listening. The EPO publishes fresh podcasts every week on new technologies, the economic impact of patents, advice for innovators. So listen out for more podcasts soon. And there's another podcast related to the Patent Index on smart health. So watch out for that too. But for today, from Jan, Victor and myself, it's goodbye.
Au revoir.
Tot ziens.
Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye.
Subscribe to the European Patent Office's podcast channel, Talk Innovation, at epo.org or on your favorite podcast platform. Let's talk innovation.